This is a Sound Rebel podcast.
To work with us on your podcast, go to soundrebel.co.uk. Over the Influence is no longer just a podcast. Our online community is buzzing with people like you.
I'm Danielle from Hertfordshire, and I'm nearly 10 months sober now. I was probably what you'd call a grey area drinker. I didn't drink all the time, but when I did, I didn't really have an off switch, and it just left me feeling low energy, low motivation, and just not really an optimal version of myself. I joined the OTI community after listening to the awesome Over the Influence podcast for quite a few months, and I've never looked back. There's Zoom calls every week on different days. You actually get to see Shaz and Ben, which is so exciting, and make that kind of community a reality and really come to life. I would highly, highly recommend joining the Over the Influence community. It was the game changer for me to feel connected in sobriety.
You've heard the podcast. Now join the conversation. Go to overtheinfluence.co.uk.
Welcome to Over the Influence. It's marvellous to have you listening. Hope your month is going well. We hope you are well. As always, thank you. We love having you listening wherever you may be on your alcohol-free journey. We have a lot of people that listen to this podcast when they are sober curious. You know, you're possibly still drinking or just cutting down or being mindful with maybe a thought towards removing alcohol for a set period of time. Well, wherever it is. And I'm going to talk about that actually in just a sec, because I want to share something with you. Before I do that, an intro as to who the hell we are. My name's Sharon Hartley. I am 50 years old, based in Lancashire in the northwest of England. 2000 days ago, I made a decision to take a break from alcohol. Did you hear that? That Ben, that big fat number there.
And just that's 2000 days today. Alcohol free, is that right? Well, in Shazza.
Which is phenomenal. Well, but
it's 2K day.
It's 2K.
On Over the Influence.
Today. 2K today. Yeah. It's really important for me to share that I did not want to be here, okay, when I set out having this boring break from alcohol. Because if you'd have told me back then, Shaz, you know, you're not going to drink for 2,000 days. You're never going to pick up a bottle of rosé again or swill back some vodka Red Bulls and all the rest of it. And I've gone, yeah, all right, whatever. I wouldn't have believed it. And when I set out doing this, it was only ever meant to be a break. And I think it's really important to acknowledge that so many people set out thinking, I can't do it forever. I don't want to do it forever. You don't need to think that. What do we keep saying, Ben? Get to 100 days. Just get to 100 days and reassess. And that's exactly what I did. I got to 90 and I thought, well, I've got to go for the year, haven't I? I can't not. And then you get to the year and I thought, I got to carry on. I got to do this a little bit longer. And before you know it, you are choosing alcohol-free life because it is a million times better. Nothing gives me more joy than sitting on this podcast week in, week out, banging on about the surprises in sobriety, about the amazing adventure. Yeah, it's not all sweetness and light. Our guest today, who's coming up in just a sec, will tell you that it's not all unicorns farting glitter. he's quite adamant about that. Yes, it's him. It's that chap. 2,000 days today. I say accidentally. It's not an accident anymore. I am well and truly choosing this lifestyle because it's a million times better than the one previously. But I never set out to get this far down the line. And I'm so glad I gave myself a chance and stuck with it. So really, really big deal for me today. I'm chuffed to bits. Enough about me. This podcast is about our guests, and we'll get to Danny
five minutes in.
And in fact, if I could just talk about myself a little bit longer, that'd be marvellous. Ben, how are you?
Yes, I'm all right, thank you. I'm Ben. I'm 35. I live in Liverpool. And I will keep this short. I definitely didn't mean to give up alcohol forever. I said I'd do 3 months, got there, felt good. So extended it to six, got to six, thought, you know what, be cool to say a year, got to a year. And on day 366, kind of objectively went, I am a better person. I function better. I'm nicer to be around. I like myself more. everything is more positive without alcohol in my life. So I decided then to carry on. And here I am 3.5 years later. I can't believe that. 3.5 years later. But I love alcohol-free life. And I love the vast array of people that it has brought into my life. And I have to say, today's guest, Sharon, is perhaps one of my all-time favourite people I've met because of alcohol-free life. The quotes that this man provides that I use, I mean, you've already said one. It's not all unicorn farts and glitter, is it? And when he said that on a Zoom call one day, it just absolutely made me howl. There are other Danny quotes that I've got that I will drop in throughout this episode. But Shaz, over to you for the big intro.
Yeah, as we say, this podcast is about the guests. It really is. And yes, we've had the alcohol-free authors. We've had, you know, the AF bigwigs in the wellbeing world, the influencers, all of it. But nothing gives us greater joy when we speak to friends and community members on the podcast because, well, I'm going to stop because if you think I can talk, Danny can certainly talk. Danny from Cheshire. Good morning. Welcome to Over the Influence. How the hell are you? It's ace to have you here.
Good morning. Lovely to speak with you both, and something I never thought I'd be doing. So, I'm doing well. I'm doing very well.
Let's start there. Why? Why did you think this would be something that you would never, ever be doing?
I think when you sort of said that you didn't intend to be sober, I don't think you're going to meet many people that was, I dragged myself kicking and screaming over probably a 7 or 8 year period to being fully sober and actually removing alcohol altogether from my life after repeated attempts of trying to keep it in there. My drinking, you alluded to it in your introduction, was a complete and utter shit show. And my recovery, and I do class myself as being in recovery, has been going on for a very long time. So I actually sort of sobered up after 25 years of very heavy drinking in 2014. And I can come on and tell you how I got there. But I think the reluctance to accept that this has to be... The change in my mindset now, I'm coming up for 500 days sober, is unbelievable. And this is since I've joined OTI. Now, I used to think OTI was like recovery light. I used to think my issues were far too serious for Over the Influence. So.
I mean, to be honest with you, Danny, you know, we thought that as well.
Yes. we've got to say it, haven't we? Danny's first ever post in our forum was like, basically, don't know why I'm here, not sure this is going to work, but let's give it a try anyway, whatever, might see you on a Zoom, might not, laters, Danny. That was basically the tone of the first message, wasn't it?
Yeah, because my cynicism was because I'd kind of done the rounds by that point. You know, I'd been to AA, which just wasn't for me. I mean, the sort of story behind it, I started drinking at a very young age, and I'm very, very careful of the stories that I tell myself these days. You know, what I would have said is everybody was doing it. Everybody was out drinking on parks at 13. They weren't. The vast majority of people were probably quite diligent students in school. But I had a very loving upbringing, mother and father. Alcohol was in the house, but it was never in a harmful way, or it is a generational thing. We talk about it quite a lot that, you know, you might have got back in those days. I was born in the 70s. So growing up in the early 80s, you might have got the sort of, oh, give him a sip of beer, give him a baby sham at Christmas, that type of thing, but nothing in a neglectful way. I can remember drinking very early, and I can remember seeing it as a treat very early. And when I got to about sort of 10 or 11 years old, I think, my mother started drinking. Now, she had never drank until she was 40 years old. Now, she was dead by 52. So, and that was alcohol. So whether or not there's a bit of genetics going on, or there's a bit of my drinking, I wanted to rebel as an adolescent. And as I said, I was out drinking on parks. When you're out doing that, you're drinking to get drunk. That was at a very young age. I think it's well established now that if you're doing that, you're binge drinking in your early teens, very early teens, to getting blackout drunk, it causes you damage because your brain's still forming. So yeah, it's pretty well recognized now, isn't it? But I was, I'm in parallel with my mother's drinking because, I mean, she was a wonderful, wonderful woman. And she certainly didn't, I used to think that she chose the path that she was going down. And I can't even say that that influenced my drinking because I was drinking myself in tandem with it, at the ages that I was at. So yeah, at the age I was at when I was in the early teens. So yeah, so I then continued to drink very, very heavily, very, very problematically for 25 years. I don't think I've ever drank in my life for any other reason than to get drunk. If you drink heavily for 25 years and get drunk for 25 years, you're gonna have a lot of disasters, whether they're health disasters, accidents, relationships with people, work. There's not an area of my life that's not affected. Now, I could look at it and go, and I probably used to look at it and hold on to those very, very few memories of where I've just had a couple, you know, I used to just have a couple of pints and come home and have my dinner, but that was the exception, not the rule. So yeah, so if I look at my drinking, honestly, it's been a total shit show for 25 years. And then, I removed it from my life 10 years ago, rather than this being a sort of rock bottom fest, which I could fill hours and hours of, of stories of disasters. What I think it might be more beneficial to talk about is my attempts at recovery, because, you know, if it's going to assist anybody, which is genuinely what I hope, then I think it's that I'd like to go through.
Well, let's definitely focus the episode on that, Danny. But before we do, I'd love to pick up on the idea of this kind of series of disasters, because being very blunt, looking at it from the outside, you know, you are an incredibly successful guy in terms of the kind of societal definition of success. You've had a great career. You're a self-made man, beautiful wife, beautiful home, fabulous friendships. Like a lot of the kind of boxes that people think, yeah, tick, tick, tick equals success. You've ticked. So how did that kind of, you know, you're living this life which other people are aspiring to.
I was conventionally successful whilst I managed to drink, or whilst I drank the way that I drank. So I started my own business at 22. It was a bedroom business. It really took off. I was employing dozens and dozens of people within a couple of years of starting it. I'm amazed that I managed to do what I do, because what it actually did was excuse my drinking. So again, it was the stories that I was telling myself. I mean, the list of disasters were tremendous, and none of them woke me up. I mean, I've had a house fire. I've broke more bones than you want to know about. I'd had every single, because again, I was drinking so heavily and daily for such a long time. I was in a constant state of either being drunk or hungover. So I'm amazed that I managed to do so, you know, so well, in air quotes. I mean, I look back at it now, I don't consider I was doing well at all. But yeah, as far as conventionally successful is concerned, yeah, I started a business. It did very well. I earned a hell of a lot of money, and I used to use that as a reason to assist my denial about the fact that I clearly had a very, very serious problem with alcohol. I'd be able to come out with sentences like, every good deal I've ever done in the pub, you know, look at the amount of money that I was taking home. And just, so was anyone else doing that? I'm not doing bad, am I, considering I've got, yeah, I mean, it was used to justify the drinking.
One of the things that you've said to me before, Danny, I said, we'll drop in a few of your quotes, and I hope you don't mind, because they make me laugh, but at the same time, they're really important. Like, you know, it's not all unicorns, farts and glitter. It's very funny, but you're right, it isn't. You know, when you remove alcohol, life comes at you and you've got to deal with it head on, et cetera, et cetera. Another one that you said that really stuck with me was, I didn't wake up on a fucking park bench. I woke up in a 10 grand fucking bed. And I think, you know, that's a really, it's a good point. I mean, we were having a laugh at the time. But again, it's that whole kind of societal perception thing, isn't it? Is that you were saying that actually, no, it might have looked like this from the outside and lots of really good things were happening. At the same time, you know, in terms of problematic drinking, it doesn't just look like one thing. You know, I think that's again a societal problem, isn't it? Is that we go, oh, right, okay, well, this person can't have a problem over here. This person can't be struggling with this because they've got the house, they've got the car, the business is ticking over. You know, therefore, how can they be having issues?
Absolutely, it fed my denial. So you'd look at the stereotypical alcoholic, and you know now I will call myself an alcoholic. It's taken me 10 years of being sober to get to that point where I just go, no, this is what it is. If it walks like a duck, quacks like a duck, it's probably a duck, isn't it? But I've spent years and years of my life refusing to accept because of the status that I had, because of the career that I had, because, you know, all the crap that you hear, the park bench, the vodka on the cornflakes, all of this terminology, these phrases that you hear around the word alcoholic, I refuse to accept it. That would then feed the fact that I was drinking. It's taken me a long time for me to go, no, let's look at this situation for what it actually is. In every other area of my life, I've been relatively bright. You know, I'd like to think I'm a pretty bright boy, but when it comes to this, I've been thick as shit. So there's nothing wrong with getting to the realization that that I'm sick to death of getting in the ring with this stuff. But where I didn't realize I'd fit in, and I sort of fit in with OTI, and hopefully that's, you know, again, I've done more rock bottoms than you want to know about. I've done the divorce. I've done the financial disasters. I've done the trouble with the police. I've harmed myself in more ways than, you know, we would have to go long form. We'd have to do a rich roll and do 3 hours just so I could go through the rock bottoms. So, and I don't mind.
Let's not.
I don't mind talking about any of them. You know, I don't, because I've done some shameful things in drink, some shameful things. I'm certainly never going to be ashamed about sobering up. And, you know, and realizing what, you know, realizing where I was for most of my life. But yeah, the park bench, nonsense that people come out with, I think is something that I'd be very keen to stop. You know that I'm quite passionate about the way that I identify now. And, you know, that's because I've got to call it what it is.
I want to pick up on some of the language you've used since we've started talking. And I knew this episode would be brilliant, and it already is. And I know that there's going to be people listening that are just so relating to this. So thank you, Danny, for being so honest with us. Several times you've talked about denial, making excuses, refusing to accept, getting in the ring with it. Again, it's like, right, here we go, gloves on, I'm going to get back in the ring with it. That image in itself, it's frightening. You've talked about being shameful, thick as shit. All these negative connotations, all to do with the stories you've told yourself as a drinker, as an alcoholic, over the years. At what point did you change that narrative and move on from the denial and turn it into acceptance as to where you were at?
Right. Well, I stopped drinking in 2014. So I changed my relationship with alcohol in 2014. Yeah. So after a never ending list of disasters that we haven't got time to go through. Yeah. Multiple hospitalizations, horrendous health issues, that again, I don't know whether or not it's positive to go through them, but In 2014, I had to stop drinking for the first period of my life. And I had to stop drinking because my cholesterol had come in at 10. I was having problems with my stomach, and of course that wasn't alcohol. That was anything but alcohol. I was having allergy tests, food allergy tests. I thought I was lactose intolerant at one point. It was nothing to do with the fact I was...
It's got to be the coffee, isn't it? It's got to be that morning coffee.
It's the coffee. Coffees at the garage, Danny, you
tell
me.
It's the latte.
It was the Costa lattes. It wasn't the rum. Yeah, it was nothing to do with the fact that I was drinking. I mean, to give you an idea about the levels of drinking, I'm not just trying to avoid the disaster stories. I was, you know, but I also don't want people to gauge themselves off my scale and go, oh, well, I wasn't that bad. Yeah. Because, you know, again, it's an important part of the story. But, yeah, I mean, when I was having problems with my stomach, I was probably drinking 8 pints a night and a bottle of wine. And then at the weekend, I was probably drinking 6 bottles of wine, 8 bottles of wine and drinking, you know, and this went on for years and years and years. So I had a cholesterol. I was having all these problems with my stomach. Which certainly wasn't the first medical issue I've had. Again, I've had dozens, including but not limited to breaking my back, which I did pissed. You know, I'd already had detoxes by that stage as well. So, but anyway, 2014, I went into, I was having these problems with my stomach. That involved having a set of bloods done. My cholesterol came in at 10. The lady on the results line, I had a few conversations I'll never forget, was sort of going, 10? I've never seen a 10 before. And I thought, well, if your job's giving out results, that's not a great sign. So they wanted to put me on statins. This was while they were trying to get to the bottom of why my stomach kept swelling up through the day and was incredibly painful. Now, I know now it was alcoholic gastritis that was causing the problems, strangely enough, not because I was lactose intolerant and necking 5 Costas a day, or it wasn't because I needed to remove gluten from my diet. It was because I was a raving pisser. That was the problem. So they could have saved a few quid on ultrasounds and just gone, yeah, try cutting out the crates of wine and beer. But anyway, so I sobered up because they wanted to put me on statins. Your liver produces cholesterol, doesn't it? And that involved a liver function test. And of course, I had a fatty liver. So I was terrified of having a stroke. Now, again, in the list of things that had happened to me in my life, going on some tablets was practically a nothing in comparison. But for some reason, it really bothered me that I was going to end up having a stroke. So I had to stop drinking to return my liver to its normal function in order to get the statins, whilst they were still trying to investigate what the matter was with my stomach was. And anyway, because I had a window of a couple of weeks sober for the first time in 20 odd years, I ended up meeting somebody, and sure enough, in those couple of weeks, I started thinking, God, this is good. I don't feel constantly like I've been hit by a car. I ended up meeting somebody who was massive in AA. And he spoke to me for about an hour and said, why don't you just do a year? Why don't you just try and do a year and see what happens to your life? And he was very evangelical about it. And he was very persuasive about it. And I thought, do you know, I'm going to do this. And I think because of the circles I'd surrounded myself with, the social circles I was in, I didn't even really know living sober was a thing. I don't think I knew anybody. Birds of a feather flock together, don't they? So yeah. I was all of my mates were just on the piss, and I thought that was everybody, but of course it wasn't. The vast majority of people weren't living like that. So anyway, so I listened to him, and I thought, I'm going to do this. I'm going to do a year, and I did it. So this was my first attempt at recovery. So he was trying to get me to go to AA. I would not accept, because of my previous financial success, career success, that I was an alcoholic. I just wouldn't accept that. So I would never go to AA. And in that year, so I did it. I did the 12 months. And in that year, funnily enough, strangely enough, my relationship started getting better with everybody. I started doing even better at work. I started absolutely smashing it. You know, the list of changes and benefits to my life were absolutely huge, but there was no plan. There was no program. There was no anything. I was the epitome of somebody with pink cloud syndrome. So pink cloud syndrome being a negative, because I was just in love with life for the first 6 months, which is completely unrealistic, because life, you know, that you come crashing off that pink cloud. But it was because I wouldn't accept the label. I wouldn't accept alcoholic. So I wouldn't go to AA. So around that time, about 2015, it was the advent of quite a few online sober communities. And some of these advocate resetting your drinking, taking a break off to reset your drinking. Now, that played into my hands as far as denial was concerned perfectly, because I thought, I've done my 12 months and I've reset my drinking, so I can go back to drinking again. Now, which is lunacy. It's absolute, utter lunacy, considering what I've just described. So I did, after 14 months, and I picked a drink up. And lo and behold, I didn't only pick up where I left off. It was worse. It was worse. So then what happened, for a number of years, I went through this pattern of sort of going, right, I'm going to do 90 days off drinking and prove to myself that I'm not an alcoholic, or that I've not got this issue with alcohol, because who else does 90 days off drinking? I've just not had a drink for a year. How can I be an alcoholic when I've not had a drink for a year and I'm doing it, you know? So that was the rhetoric. That was the bullshit that I was telling myself. And I could ignore the absolute utter carnage that would happen when I picked a drink up after those 90 days or 6 months or 3 months sober. And this went on for years.
And Danny, why do you think that, you know, it wasn't just, you know, you didn't just pick up where you left off? Why was it worse every time that happened?
When people say they don't have an off switch, you do have an off switch. It's your frontal, it's in your frontal lobe, and mine's broken. So when I have a drink, my brain is expecting a ton of it, because that's what it's been taught to expect. So that when people, you know, when you hear the William Porters of this world talking about the corresponding feeling of anxiety that you get when you have a drink, I get that on steroids. I get that, I honestly believe something very, very different happens in my brain than it would if somebody who wasn't as problematic drinker picks a drink up. And I think I've absolutely nailed that point. So yeah, so that's why. So I've proven it. I've proven, I did not want to believe this for a second, because again, it was everything in my life. It was everything in my life for 25 years. I wouldn't accept any labels. I wouldn't accept the truth behind my drinking and the fact that I do now is the revelation. And that's the reason why, you know, I'm so consistently sober now. But yeah, that's why I think something different happens, Ben.
Let's pick up then where you are now. So approaching 500 days completely and utterly alcohol free, which is breathtaking. And it's phenomenal. And your story, it's so important to share. We take the rip massively about, you know, when you came into our community. Because as Ben said, and when, you know, we say this to anybody, we're not a recovery service. We are not a stop drinking program. We are a community of like-minded individuals. It's about support, connection, motivation, inspiration. You tried everything and, you know, found OTI, however you found us. And I fully understand why you'd be so cynical. You know, it's like, bloody hell, here we go again. Right, I'll give this shit a shot. Let's see what happens. What we've not mentioned yet, and I'd like to talk about this more now, is at 500 days alcohol-free, you are so active within our community. You host Zoom calls now, helping other people that might be struggling. You have your own secret hike club that even myself and Ben are not freaking invited to. It's like it's like a secret club, Ben. Have you ever been? No.
I know all about it. I've seen all the what happens on hike club stays on hike club, all this kind of crap that goes around in the forum. Yeah, yeah.
But what's happened is this phenomenal turnaround. We've seen you at your very, very worst in terms of, you know, physically, mental health, when you have had a relapse. That has not happened in the best part of 500 days. And it's like, it sounds so corny. It's, well, it's not the new Danny. This is the Danny that always was, just not clouded in, you know, 17 tons of alcohol. You've got friendships, you've got connections, you're out in the open air meeting people, inviting people into your home. Let's talk about that and how important connection has been as part of your ongoing recovery.
There's been a few major changes, and without any doubt, OTI has been the biggest one. I used to think that this was, again, it was like recovery light. It's not for drinkers like me. I belong, in air quotes, in AA, but I never wanted to go. I've done a fair bit of AA, and I love a lot of the, you know, I love a lot of what's behind it, but I'm not into, you know, I've made me amends. I've apologized. Obviously, the relationships I affected in drink over such a long period of drinking, I've drank on the shame of what I've done drinking so many times that I don't consider it a productive way for me to spend my time anymore, to be sat in a Methodist church hall at 10 o'clock on a Saturday morning, you know, re-going over mistakes that I've made, that I've already gone over a million times in my life. So I joined OTI. As I said, I'd done the rounds a hell of a lot. OTI, you know, advocates abstinence, doesn't it? It's an abstinence based group. It's not trying to get you to moderate.
No, none of that. We're here to, we celebrate sobriety, because, you know, in many places in life, be it socially, within your families, you can't. And so that's what we're about. We sing about sobriety.
No. And if anybody is listening to this that thinks that you can, you can't. I'm living proof that you can't. It just gets worse. It's progressive. That's what happens. I've done this for long enough. So I joined OTI because, and what's happened since I've joined, you mentioned you've seen me at my worst, that the mindset shift is huge. I never knew where I'd fit in. So OTI is too happy clappy. AA is too doom and gloom. This is where I used to be mentally. And I'm so grateful for the fact that now I look back, and again, this isn't through OTI. I'm probably one of the only people in it that, you know, will call myself an alcoholic, but that's evidence based. You know, there's the Department of Health splits it into five categories, don't they? And if you listen to David Nutt, that's been on your podcast, he said sort of all of the harmful and dependent, you know, all of the dependent drinkers are alcoholics. And again, we could go on about that word forever, but I love where I'm at. I absolutely love my life. So I'm the stereotypical grateful alcoholic. I'm so happy with the friends that I've got, the life that I've got, the hiking, the nature, the wellness space that I live in, that I wouldn't be in were I not a problematic drinker. I love my recovery. And, you know, some of the friends I've got through the community are so close. I can't imagine life without them. So the mindset shift for me, which has come from OTI, it's not come from... over all these years when I've been in these other sober communities, and trust me, I've done the rounds. I think I joined Soberistas, which is only for women. I joined Hello Sunday Morning, which is only for Australians. I've done them all, honestly. So I was just like, here's another one. I'll chuck 20 quid at this, and then it'll just be a load of the same. I'll pour half my life story out in a post in a forum when I don't like social media anyway, and I'll just get a couple of dozen people saying you've got this when I clearly fucking haven't. Pardon my language. and quite the opposite happened. So the connection side of it is it's huge. I've tried this on my own for years. And yes, there's other elements to my life that I've had to fix, that I've had to look at. I used to say to people, I binge drink on stress. Stress is inevitable. I needed to cope with the way, I needed to deal with the way that I deal with stress. But again, through OTI, through somebody in OTI, I found stoicism, which is now a massive part of my life. And it's the program that I've built And it is a program. It's not a toolbox because I'm not tinkering with this. It's a serious issue. But the program that I've built around sort of OTI, you know, I know you say, Shaz, it's not, you know, it's not a recovery program, OTI, but it's part of mine. And what I wanted to get across on the podcast is that if people are at my end of the scale, this can still work. This can still, you know, do you follow me?
Completely. It's like part of a jigsaw, isn't it? Basically. So you take elements from whatever recovery tools work for you. And if OTI is one of them, absolutely brilliant. We've got people in here that maybe only drank at weekends or drank a glass of wine a day. But again, still, it's about that connection and they want to remove it and, you know, talk to other people that, for whatever reason, choose not to drink. And OTI is the only thing that they need. And that's their missing piece of the jigsaw. For you, it's a part of multiple other things that you've got going on. And it's absolutely fabulous. But, you know, myself and Ben, we have visually witnessed this change over the last 18 months, 2 years you've been with us. I'm not exactly sure about the dates. It feels like a freaking lifetime, Danny, sometimes. It really, really does.
In the nicest possible way, Danny.
He knows what I mean.
I've put you through it. Then again, 20 quid's 20 quid, isn't it? I want to get my money's worth.
I think it was about £5,000, yeah. Actually.
Yeah, it's a good job. It's a good job the meter's not on.
I'm kidding. For time spent.
But yeah, you can build something. Forget the language. The language is important for me because the bullshit that I tell myself is the stories that I tell myself are very, very important. And, you know, I've nailed the point. I've nailed the fact that I can't, you know, that I can't drink, but it's not that I can't drink. It's I do not want to anyway. I wouldn't want to, even if I was in air quotes, a normal drinker. I love the life it's given me. And you don't have to be, this doesn't have to be doom and gloom, even if you had a very serious drinking issue. So I think that's the kind of message that I want to get across. As I said, I'm grateful. I love my life. I love being me. You know, it's not, you know, and I remember when I first started out on this, I was quite the opposite. It was something that I couldn't do anymore. Because I had an issue, and it's taken time. You might say, Shaz, I've still got a few issues.
Just the one, Danny. Just the one. Did you see my eyes raise then?
I saw you nearly laugh then. But yeah, I've still got a couple of issues. You kind of uncover them. But yeah, I love it. I absolutely love it. And you know, and the last year as well. You know, the last 18 months or so, whatever it is, I've had some tremendously difficult things to deal with as well. And without the coping mechanisms that I've now got, that I've developed, and this is a real, I know you think that the word journey is a bit, but it is a journey. It is. It's that, you know, it's what I've been on, and I've had to identify that if I used to pour a load of crap down my throat every time I got stressed or every time things didn't work out the way I wanted them to, I've had to get coping mechanisms in order to make sure that that doesn't happen. And then what happens, you put bits, like you said, it's like a jigsaw. And what's been created for me is just wonderful, you know. So yeah, I'm more at peace than I've ever been. And this has been in the most challenging 18 months, or again, whatever it is, that I've had for many, many years on a personal level. So who'd have thought it?
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, I don't want to go through the timeline of the last 18 months for you, Danny, but I think we could say there's been huge amounts of stress, some real sadness, tragedy. You know, it has been a tough time for you, mate. And I think, what are those pieces of the puzzle for you then? Like, if before your kind of go-to was, I feel this way and therefore fridge, bottle, open, down the neck, what do you use now? What are your coping mechanisms now?
And it was exactly that then. It was exactly that. So it was something has happened. Things in life will happen. they will. But it was exactly that. Something's happened. I'm going to get pissed. Something. And the older you get, everybody recognizes. I know from your story, Ben, and most people, you know, a lot of people are the same. You start drinking to have fun, don't you? And then you end up pouring that crap on stress or on bad times or on, you know, it depends on the reason why you're poisoning yourself, doesn't it? And as soon as it becomes for escapism from a situation, I think you're in the shit. What are they now? Again, I mentioned the sort of stoicism aspect of life. A couple of people kept pointing me towards the Daily Stoic. And I know on your quotes board, Ben, you have a couple of stoic quotes.
An array of. I do. You know what? I was just looking up there. I've got you on my quotes board a couple of times. I'm surprised I don't have any Marcus Aurelius. I need to fix that, Danny, because he's one of our faves, isn't he, Marcus?
You need to address your group.
We've got a situation there.
Yours is fabulous. And you said this on a Zoom call once. A bad hour doesn't mean a bad morning. A bad morning doesn't mean a bad day. A bad day doesn't mean a bad week. Danny Bangers is what I've quoted, because you are the man of many nicknames in our community. And actually, I have to say, Sharon, at this point, you know, we, in terms of kind of taking the mickey, you mentioned earlier that, we all take the mick. I kind of feel like Danny doesn't really give it back to us much. Like, we've called Danny now Danny Bangers. This is his, you know, definitely not Danny's name. But because you invested in a sausage roll van, you became Danny Bangers, the Porky Prince, the Prince of Pastry, the Sausage King of the Northwest. Then Sharon, you added in, what was your nickname that you added?
Oh, I think I called middle-aged him pastry middle-aged boy. Pastry boy. That was it. That was a cracker, that one, Danny.
Yeah. So I'm sorry that I've actually got you down here as Danny Bangers rather than your actual name, Danny.
Yeah, but what happens actually? Can I just sort of... probably make this sound even worse than it actually is. What happens is, a lot of the time when we're talking in particular on the Premium podcast, we'll reference a Zoom call or something that Danny said maybe on one of his, under the radar hikes, whatever it might be. And we talk about Danny a lot behind his back. That's why. Yeah, and that's where these...
Well, that's made me feel even better.
No, but then he hears it because the episode comes out on the Monday anyway. So you know what we've been saying.
He hears it, yeah.
I called him a beefcake a couple of weeks ago, but we won't go into that one.
But let's get back to the important bit, which is the quote here. A bad hour doesn't mean a bad morning. A bad morning doesn't mean a bad day. A bad day doesn't mean a bad week. That's very stoic, isn't it, Danny?
All of it. The entire outlook is you control so little in life apart from the tiny space between your ears. And, you know, and the dichotomy of control is that, but that is everything, the space between your ears that you do control as well. It's your entire outlook on the world and life. So I've been gifted this. I'm amazed at what I've been through in the last year. I've had a bereavement, as you know, that was very, very traumatizing as well. You know, it has not been easy, but life is not. So I feel prepared now for more or less anything, because, you know, anything can happen. The friendships, I was so private. I was such a private, but I mean, I can't believe I'm on this podcast for a starters. I couldn't believe that I'm arranging these hikes, because the love I've got for nature and for hiking and for, you know, that wasn't there either. I mean, it was there when I was a child, but like a lot of people, your entire life goes on hold when you start drinking alcohol. So I'd have to go back to sort of 12 years old. I used to go out walking with my dad, who sadly passed away this year. And then I didn't go back into the fells until I was about 41. Even when I joined OTI, I was so miserable that, yeah, you know, I used to think this was just a solo activity and piss off. I want to be on my own. Not with the people in OTI. Obviously, now I'm arranging things with groups of other sober people where we're meeting in the middle of nowhere, in dark car park, dodgy car park. Well, I can't tell you, obviously, it's a secret.
It's a secret.
I'm glad that you tell us that you are very keen to let us know that there's been no deaths, which is really good, because, you know...
Not at the moment.
Not at the moment. Although you nearly killed me on one of these hikes, Danny, because we went to where did we? What
Hell Valley?
Last February, Yeah, was it last January, last February? It was early in the year, wasn't it? And you were like, let's go and do Helvellyn. And I thought, you know what? I've never done Helvellyn. Let's do that. Yeah, fabulous. We get to the top, Shaz, and it's literally snow-covered, wasn't it, Daddy? The top of Helvellyn. Absolutely snow-covered.
I was saying if it was quite weather-dependent, because we were going to do Swirl's Edge, which is pretty dangerous.
So, yeah, yeah.
So we need to make sure it's dry. And spent the entire week glued to the weather forecast, and there was no rain forecast, and there was no snow. And I thought we're good. So we got to Helvellyn, and the one thing I didn't account for was the fact that it was already covered in fucking snow.
Literally, we get to the top, right? Like, and I just look, I think, like, it's everything is covered in ice. I'm like, I've got a new baby here. Like, because we started going up this one bit, and I kind of climbed up and went, this isn't the way, Danny. And I went, oh, right, so I've got to jump down. And I looked on one side, and there's like, you know, 500-foot drop that side, 500-foot drop that side. I was like, this could be the end. But at least I've ended it with Danny, you know.
Sorry, the key word in what you said is you nearly died. You didn't. I've now done that many hikes I've now arranged that many hikes with OTI members that even if we did lose one, it's still statistically very safe. So it's a safe bet. So it'd be a fraction of a percentage by now. It's not, you know, it'd still be way up in the 90s. But yeah, all of it.
But it's not, it doesn't sound like a solo activity anymore, Danny.
No, it's not. It's not. And I love it. And, you know, again, as a very private, self-proclaimed miserable bastard, which I was, you know, the enthusiasm that I've got for life and for all of this that I'm doing is huge. And Ben, I've heard you say a lot of times, because you know this is my favourite podcast, you know that as well. I live off audio, and this has always been my favourite one. And again, it doesn't sound like technically I belong here, does it? You know, because, and you've said that, you know, you're not running away from something bad, you're running towards something good. I need to remember that I'm running away from something bad as well. It's so ubiquitous, alcohol, that all it would take is, you know, for me to have a very, very stressful day, and I live in a very, you know, the world I operate in is pretty stressful. You know, I'm running businesses, and things happen. And as I said, I've had a bereavement this year. It doesn't take a lot for a bad decision to be made. I've made this such a large part of my life. You know, before you know it, you're stood in a petrol station with a load of booze next to your head, and you go, oh, balls to it. Historically, that's what had happened, you know, and it had gone on for years. What happens now? I've got so many contacts, so many friends, so much accountability, so much to look forward to. All of these other aspects, it's not just stoicism, it's everything wellness. I love, you know, I love the meditation, the, you know, the breath work, the nature, the fresh air, the journaling, all of it. And it's become my life, and I wouldn't swap it for the world. So again, I'm incredibly grateful to be where I'm at. And I mean that. That's not just me making some gratitude list every morning and going, I'm grateful for my coffee and I'm grateful for my wife. I'm genuinely grateful for where I'm at in life. You know, I'm fitter than I've ever been. My relationships with everybody are better than they've ever been. I've got more friends, you know, some really, really, really close ones as well. You know, that are in this community, a couple, you know, one in particular that I feel like we've been at bloody war together, and, you know, they're just coming up for 12 months without a drink. And that will mean more to me than my own 12 months did. And, yeah. You know, and I, I'm watching people's lives change as well that I love and care about. And I wouldn't swap it for the world. So, yeah, I think the message is, if there's anybody out there that's sort of going, you know, my drinking's too serious for that, it's not. You know, it's not. It's worked wonders for me.
I don't know what else to say. I just, oh, yeah, that's brilliant. That person you're talking about there, who's coming up for a year, that person will be listening to this podcast, and we know exactly who you mean, and it is wonderful. You've said it all, Danny, to be honest. And again, thank you for being dead honest. It's almost a podcast of two halves, this one. You know, obviously we talked about the horrors of many, many years, and you've changed it all. You know, you've changed it all, and It's a joy to have you as part of this community. We have, dear gosh, we have a lot of really serious conversations, you know, about alcohol and mental health and where it can take you and all that. On the flip side of that, there's so much humour. There's so much fun. The friendships are absolutely amazing. I, for one, you've talked about there about so much stuff to look forward to. I think it's May this year, Ben. We're going to get to see Danny in his wetsuit again because he's coming to Snowdon.
Fabulous.
Which will be, you
great.
Know, worth the ticket fee alone for chatting to
Sold out now.
Sold out because of that out. Reason.
Yeah, yeah.
I can't describe how far away that was from me a few years ago, honestly. Going to Snowdon and with a load of randoms and getting in a wetsuit to go paddleboarding. Yeah. It's not, but I love it.
But you know what? It's interesting. You've given me another quote for my quote board today, Danny. Because you know I always say that, you know, I didn't have a rock bottom, but I could see it from where I was standing. You know, quote from someone on one of our very first Zoom calls. Well, you said earlier, it just gets worse. Hang on, sorry, Tom. You said earlier, it just gets worse. It's progressive. That's what happens. Like, just absolutely no bullshit, you know. It gets worse. It's progressive. That's what happens. But in a way, you know, you also flip it. And what you're saying is the other thing is true as well. You've been in a wetsuit at the bottom of Snowdon. Not that we're climbing Snowdon in wetsuits, but it's a weekend where we go paddleboarding as well. And, you know, but, you know, that's so far away. But again, it's kind of, you kind of inched into that, haven't you? You know, it's progressive the other way, out the other side, the kind of the wellness side of it. It's just growing and growing for you as you add more pieces to your puzzle.
I think it's definitely a conversation of two halves, isn't it? If there's anybody that's listening to this and they think they can reset the drinking, or they think they can return back to, you know, they think they can have some time off and go back and it be anything but worse than what it was before they left off. I've absolutely proven over years and years that does not happen. I think the accountability or the owning up to how bad it was has been absolutely integral for me. So another quote, I would rather go through life sober, believing I'm an alcoholic, than drunk, trying to convince myself that I am not. So I don't need a snazzy new name for stuff. I'm not, you know, I'm, and again, I've not arrived there in a point of dismay. I'm not, you know, I'm not sad about it. It's glory. You know, it's glorious sobriety, isn't it? Which I think you've got on the homepage of your website. And without that, I wouldn't be where I am. So it is possible to have 20 odd years of drinking, a never ending list of shit shows, meet some weirdos online or some, and then just completely transform your life and end up happier than you've ever been. Even when life's still happening and it's, you know, and it can be impossibly hard sometimes. So, yeah, for the pair of you, I can't thank you enough. You know that.
Nothing further to add. We'll leave it there. Danny, you've summed it up beautifully. Thank you so much for joining us on Over the Influence. It's been a pleasure to chat. We love you, Haz. We love you. Oh, God, we love you.
We do, though.
We love you, full stop, end of episode. I can't.
You hang up first.
I can't, no, you hang up first. I can't get my words out. We love having you as part of the community. You've become a fabulous friend and you give a lot to so many other community members. Danny Baggers from Cheshire, thank you.
Thank you very much. Thanks. It's been lovely chatting with you both.